Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest joining us from Canada is Ellen Nyland, and she is author of Life is Great Even When It Sucks. Life is Great Even When It Sucks help you to deal with old and new challenges that we face every day. This book helps you move forward past fears and behaviors that block you from being who you really are and doing what you really want to do. Using a simple system, the book will teach you healthy ways to trust, deal with conflict, be accountable, honor your commitments, and live with the results of your choices. You can find out more about Ellen and her book by visiting her website, which is healthyfamilyteambuilding.com. Again, that's healthyfamilyteambuilding.com. And I do have a direct link to Ellen's website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Ellen to the show. Good day, Ellen.
Good afternoon, Robert.
Well, thank you for joining me today. I am all for helping our listeners get a healthy attitude. So, and I had to laugh. Your book title really hits home, I'm sure, with a lot of folks.
Yes, that's the number one thing I hear, the title of the book.
Well, you know, I think it's that honesty is that's going to garner a lot of attention. And so anyway, I'm really looking forward to helping our listeners understand that even though it sucks sometimes, you know, that life is still great. So, let's go ahead and start with what was it that was your inspiration for writing this book? Why did you write this book?
Well, it goes way back, and of course, at least for me, and that's how I actually came up with the title. Since I was four, I wanted to be a farmer, right? However, I grew up in a small city in a row house, so no farm in sight whatsoever. My passion of becoming a farmer actually never wavered. It became more intensified the older I got. So to get more hands-on experience, I looked for a job on a farm. And at that time, I went to agriculture school. It's just a different school system because I grew up in Holland.
Yeah.
And one of the young teacher offered me a job at his parents' place. He said, go see my dad, and he will teach you all about dairy cows and driving a tractor. At that time, I was 14, and I met his mom and dad. And this couple became my mentors, my role models, my living examples of heroes. Mm. And I will explain why. See, I found out that my teacher was the oldest of four children that Will and Sue had. And in short, the youngest boy died when he was 3 years old with a farm accident. The girl was born with brain damage. The second son was hit by a car when he was 12 and left with brain damage. And my teacher died in a car accident when he was 34, leaving a pregnant wife and three children. And the reason why Will and Sue are so inspirational, it was all about their attitude. They taught me how to live life. So even when life is great, even when it sucks. And, I mean, they had some sucky
I was going to say, I mean, if anybody has an example, they sure did. Wow, that is something.
And they would, and, I mean, I was 14, right? So you're teenagers, sometimes you don't make the right comments or kind of a little off. But they taught me and they corrected me with a laugh and a joke, but in the meaning like I'm looking here for an English word now. This manners is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying, it's not acceptable. But they did it with a laugh and a joke, but I really got the message.
Okay.
We don't do that. And I thought if I saw them really as role models, and through my life when I went with illnesses for myself, illnesses with my kids. We lost one of our kids maybe over 25 times. And with immigration, I always fell back on their teachings.
Wow.
So what I decided to do in this book, if Will and Sue can do this, and they did. I mean, graceful. It's unreal. Because I never heard them swear, and I never heard them gossip, ever. In all my years I worked there.
Well, that,
and I'm going, wow.
That's admirable, yeah.
I'm going, that's an inspiration in itself. And this is my contribute to all what I learned from them, and I put it in a book.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that is to have going through all of those challenges and losses. You know, particularly when parents have the loss of children. You know, in the challenges with children, there's just something about that is extra. It's extra hard to do and to get through.
Yeah. And this is not myself talking.
No.
I heard people saying losing a child is the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah. My goodness. Well, it's great. Now, I think that it's interesting that you, at such an early age, that even without living on a farm, that you had that draw to being a on a farm. I mean, that's just... it's just unusual, and then the fact that you ended up with such wonderful role models, and they really seems to have provided you with some wonderful life skills that you're able to translate and to help others.
Yes, and like I said, every time I talk about them, and I mean, I met them when I was 14 and I'm now 49, I get goosebumps.
Yeah. Yep, that's a sign. that was definitely meant to be. I enjoyed reading your book. It was just very practical, you know. And I'm a practical person, you know. It's like you can teach me concepts, and I enjoy learning new things. But what I truly enjoy is being able to put those things into practice to make my life easier and better and happier. Those are, to me, that's the ultimate compliment to, you know, to a book. And yours does have that. So. Well, let's go ahead and start talking about one of the, it's really like the basic thread that goes through your book, and you talk about the I am status. So I would like for you, if you wouldn't mind, sharing with the listeners what that is, again, because it really is a common thread throughout the book. And it seems to be important, really important, for people to understand what it is and to work with that.
The I am status is let me give you an example.
Sure.
See, does this sound familiar? Remembering, thinking, I'm frustrated, I'm lost, I'm just not happy. I keep going down the same path and end up nowhere, and I don't know what to do about it.
Now, I have never had one of those. No. I mean,
well,
every single one. No, yes, that is very common.
And in short, that's not your I am status.
Okay.
Because your I am status, that is the when you see a newborn baby, when you really look at the newborn baby, it is all new, it's all fresh, and it's all there. And when you see 10 babies in a row, you will see in each baby something different. You can't name it, but you see it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
That is the part of your I am status, of that is the I am status. You can't name it. Part to explain, but you know it's there.
Would you say it's like the core of your being?
Yeah, it's in the weaven in you.
Mm-hmm.
And those are qualities, and each person has different qualities, and they are all magnificent. There is no difference in, you know, maybe Johnny has honesty and persistence in his toolbox, and I am status is actually the same. And Joanne may have, she's very focused and decisive. They seem really maybe different, but when you look at Joan and Johnny, you see how wonderful they are in their own being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just kind of threw it in there the last few seconds talking about the toolbox, you know, and that that too you use throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And now you say, is it correct that they're like one in the same? I mean,
that's
okay,
exactly.
Okay. Because, you know, one of the things quite often we talk about, or at least on my show, you know, with different people, we talk about adding tools to your toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the things that I caught from reading your book is it's kind of like we're born into this world with a whole set of tools already.
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And yours are different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
But they are both exactly impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, I will say, when I was young, I did have a stint on a farm. my stepfather's family had a farm, and I'll tell you, I never worked harder one summer than my entire life. And it was at that time I knew that I was really going to apply myself to school. So that I would not work. I mean, there were so many beautiful things about it, but it is definitely hard work.
It all depends what you define with hard work.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, dairy farming, because I ended up marrying a dairy farmer.
Oh, okay.
You did. So I own now a dairy farm for the last, 29 years. So I got my wish. well, I did. But then again, we have more freedoms than others may have. So I wouldn't say if, say, for example, you're a lawyer, that doesn't mean for me that you're not working hard.
Right.
Or when you're a waitress, or take any other job, if you do a good job and you're committed to that job, you work hard.
Yeah.
And it can be emotionally, physically, or physically.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, in my take on that, it was an extremely physical job, much more than I was used to. So, but by the end of summer, I mean, I was certainly much more physical. I mean, you know, and I was used to the schedule of early to bed, early to rise. I mean, early to bed, early to rise kind of scheduling. But So we talk about the I am status. So throughout, and shortly we're going to talk about the system that you use in your book, that you talk about in your book. But the whole process to taking what sucks and recognizing that it's, you know, life is great is really working toward maintaining that I am status.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And see, you have to look at it like this. When you are reading the introduction, and maybe, I don't know if you did, from Life is Great Even When It Sucks, you will learn to redefine your definition, the words of self-image, and therefore your I am status. And as you shift your perception, you will gain the insight of how to move through the maze of barriers and frustrations that can hold you back from loving yourself.
Yes, yes, and I did. I did read your book. So it was really. I mean, that was one of those things that I, once I started, it was like I really wanted to learn the system, the 5-point system, and what it was that you showed in that. So, now, for the listeners who kind of get a sense of what the I am status is. What can we do to connect to that? What are some of the things that we can actually do to be in touch with that?
By really starting to look inside yourself, because you don't find it outside of yourself. You have to look inside of yourself. And by doing that, you will discover how to recognize that it's your attitude. It's how you react to what happens to you, not necessarily what happens to you. That is a controlling factor that drives how you live your life.
Mm-hmm. So the essence is that it's really our reaction to circumstances, not the circumstance itself.
Yep. And I would love to give an example.
Please.
For that. See, here is Mark, and Mark was a salesperson for a farm business. He's very outgoing, fun, quick with the mouth. At that time, he was 24 years old. And his problem was his attitude. He wanted to go into the farm business with his parents, which create family tension between Mark and his parents. And it didn't help much that the parents didn't approve of Mark's wife and some of his life choices that were different from theirs, especially the choices of church and expression of the faith. So what was his solution? In the section about the family culture, he learned that his parents are still going to be the same. They are not going to change their point of view. They are who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So what Mark learned was to be more open-minded, less judgmental, and looked at his attitude, therefore his own role in the whole situation. By changing his attitude towards his parents, he created the opportunity to start working with his parents with the end goal to take over the farm in 10 years.
Okay, and I understand that. So now for the listeners, what was... I mean, Mark basically changed his attitude towards parents, recognizing his parents can't change. I mean, I know this real-life situation, is very, very similar to this. When you have someone whose beliefs are not consistent with your essence, your I am status, what is the, in his particular case, how do you balance, let's say, because you mentioned how they weren't happy with his choice of wife and
yep.
lifestyle choices. So how do you balance living to your I am status with those who are close to you, either parents, family, or even workers, whose judgment, really is that your essence isn't consistent with theirs.
What he did, he kept really looking at his own his own contribution to the pile of misunderstandings, whatever, the tension, right?
Okay.
So he looked what was his pile of his tensions, and he worked on those. Because you can't change somebody else.
That's correct, yeah. As much as you want to, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, right. If you're married long enough, you know that.
Yes, that's very true.
That's not a go.
Yes.
So the only thing what you can do is look at your contribution and go from there.
Right.
And make then choices.
Right.
I mean, if his parents didn't come along of around in any shape or form, they couldn't have gone into business together.
Right. Right. So that's, you know, and I guess the answer to this would be, I mean, one of the perspectives on this one would be that, you know, they had these beliefs and that were not, you know, consistent with his. So he took the attitude that they're not going to change. That's just the way that they are. I'm not going to let that upset me. I'm not going to let that, you know, make my day sucky, you know. But I'm still going to continue to resonate with who I am.
Because that is the biggest and powerful tool you ever will have.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the more you are empowered in yourself, you don't have to agree with everybody, but you become more open-minded and less judgmental.
Yeah.
And just with that shift, just that shift alone, will create an open space for dialogue.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, and you know, I think that's where some of us get caught up in is that if someone disagrees with what we feel is right for us, you know, so many times we will tend to judge their beliefs as being wrong and being not respectful of what it is, you know, that we are doing or seeing or doing, you know, and then we just kind of create that attitude, you know, and that kind of like is the seed of conflict.
Well, and we take everything personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we at least a lot of people I encountered with, You view the world from your vision, and you know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lived on the street and that's all you see, then you take that on as normal.
Right.
If you live in Beverly Hills and that is your normal, two different worlds, and that can be maybe two neighborhoods over.
Right, yeah.
But you know what you know.
Exactly, yeah. You know, that was the one thing that, you know, and we're going to talk right after the break about, you know, what it is, you know, that our perspectives, that we constantly are judging the world or seeing the world through our own perspective and through our own yeah, set of circumstances, and you know, be it family culture, societies, you know, cultures, and those kinds of things, family. But I just wanted to say, just quickly, for those of you listening, if you have any questions and you would like to ask Ellen anything, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Ellen, feel free to type it in. And we're going to take a break shortly after this next question. So, okay, so now one of the things that you talk about in your book is the puzzle of life. Boy, it is a jigsaw puzzle for sure. One with many, many, many thousands of pieces. So would you mind explaining to people the puzzle of life?
Well, the easiest way of explaining it, there are actually puzzles who have two sides. And one would say maybe a mountain view and the other one a streetcar. So first you have to decide which puzzle do I gonna make. So if you go, I'm gonna make the mountain, then you have to look all the pieces double-sided. Is it the car side or is it the mountain side? Life is sort of the same thing. If you want your life great or do you want a life suck? And maybe you're gonna think, well, nobody wants a sucky life. But subconsciously, we keep going back to the drama in life. And that is the sucky part. The more drama in your life, it could be that you find your life way more suck because it's just a way, not what happened, of how it happened to you, but, you know, how you handled it. And that is the puzzle of life, is how you handle. Do you have a positive attitude or do you go in with a negative slide? That is the puzzle of life.
Yeah, okay. That's great. Well, you know, when we come back from the break, one part of your book, there's several parts in your book, you talk about the saboteur. And I think, you know, since we were talking about, you know, making that choice, you know, of the great or the sucky, or, you know, that subconscious, I would like to kind of explore a little bit about the saboteur, and then we can move into talking about the five-point system, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Good day, everyone. Again, thank you for staying with us. And my special guest is Ellen Nyland, and we've been talking about her book, Life is Great Even When It Sucks. You can find out more about Ellen, again, by visiting her website, which is healthyfamilyteambuilding.com. Again, healthyfamilyteambuilding.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, we're back, Ellen.
Yes, I'm here.
Great. And so before the break, you mentioned about the two-sided puzzle, the great and the sucks, and then the subconscious aspect. Sometimes we go for the sucky side, you know. And in your book, you talk about the saboteur. Would you mind explaining about that? Because I know a few people who certainly have that active in their life.
The saboteur. That's actually a coaching term. Some people call it the monkey mind. Some people call it the gremlin. It has different names, but it does the same thing on average. It's your negative self-talk. The moment you said, I have to and I should, what I hear as a coach is when a person go in that mode, I have to and I should, the tones start turning flat in their voice. Then you know it's a saboteur talking.
Yeah.
When you are alive, when you feel alive, when you talk about a topic that's really near and dear to your heart, people light up as a Christmas tree. And they go on and on and they get fired up. That is the I am status. But I have to and I should, and it's the expectation my family members have on me or my boss. You see the energy dropping?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
And that is the saboteur.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you start talking about shoulds, and then I know we were talking about self-talk, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, but I know I have a friend whose mother is constantly doing the shoulds. You should, you should. I mean, it's, you know, and it is one of his triggers. I mean, you know, the minute he hears should, ding, it's like, you know, there's immediate conflict. And even if the suggestion that she's providing, you know, is a reasonable or, you know, semi-reasonable, but just the fact of using the word should just indicates that, you know, that there's something that he needs to do that he isn't doing, that he's choosing not to do. And it's always based, I mean, of course, on her belief system, her personal view of how someone should react in a certain situation.
Well, what I would say to him, to your friend,
mm-hmm.
every time he hears the word should, mentally take a step back.
Okay.
Take a step back and observe. Because the moment you trigger something, you feel the trigger in yourself,
mm-hmm.
it's something that wants the attention that you look at it. So when he takes everything personal, when his mom said, I should,
uh-huh.
he's maybe better off to take a step back and go, that is my mom. That
right.
is her world. I don't have to engage in this.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So instead of going in attack mode, he can respond.
Yeah. Calmly and detached from
yep.
the... Okay. Okay, great. I just wanted to get that out there because, you know, that I think there's a bunch of us out there that have that go on. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's not a fun thing to have your buttons pushed, you know, to, you know, and but you're right. You know, those just the fact that that happens points that to us to recognize that there is something that we need to look within ourselves so that that doesn't happen again, so that we don't allow that to elicit like a unconscious response, an automatic response.
Yeah, and when you see, responding is different than reacting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you choose to respond, it gives a softer landing than when you react.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Yep, that's a good distinction.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, let's spend a little bit of time here talking about the 5-point systems. And if we would, maybe we can, if you would just indicate right up front what the 5 points are, and then just talk a little bit about each of them.
The 5-point system is, the way I describe it, the human race all over the world teach their offspring 5 things, basic, right? It's trust, accountability, conflict, commitment, and results. And in trust, you have different layers of trust. Trust in self, trust in others, and trust in the community or in the world around you. basically, if you don't trust yourself, you will have a challenge with trusting others and trusting the global around you. Accountability, we don't teach that to the full responsibility, because you should, right? You should. Expectations are piled up, and you have to. And conflict, we think conflict is a bad thing. We have to eliminate conflict. Well, conflict can be a really great thing, actually. If you take it in stride, say if you have conflict in work, that can create a whole new business. Because if you talk it out without attachment, more ideas come on the table, and that opens up spots for personal growth on all levels.
Yeah.
So conflict doesn't have to be bad. And then commitment, again, commitment to self, commitment to another, and commitment to a cause. But when you don't trust yourself and you're not responsible for yourself, it's very hard to commit to yourself.
Right.
And if you don't commit to yourself, it's very hard to commit to another.
Yes, it is.
Commitment to a cause is often the easiest, because there is no emotional attachment to that.
Mm-hmm.
And result is actually everything of the other four combined.
Okay.
If you wanna, what do you want out of life? That is a big question. I would really recommend everybody answering for themselves. And that's for everybody different.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no right or wrong to do this. If you want to have $1 million, for example, that's a great goal to have. But which steps do you take to get there?
Yeah.
So that's basically the bottom line of the 5-point system.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I want to go just, if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of, as I read through the book, there's a couple of things that I'd like to maybe have you talk a little bit more about. Now, the trust, you know, you mentioned, you know, the three layers of trust in self, others, and society. One of the things that really gave me pause to think about is you talk about trust being a feeling and not a fact. You know, and that is something that I don't think people often think about, you know, in viewing trust as a feeling and not a fact. And actually, it ties into another aspect that you point out in that section, and that the two main ingredients of trust are honesty and truth, and that those two aren't necessarily the same. So if you wouldn't mind, I mean, because those two ideas that you put forth in that chapter, I found, for me, I found really interesting and really gave me pause to think about my description of trust and what trust means to me. So let's start with trust is a feeling and not a fact.
Yes. Trust is when you get that fuzzy feeling, you feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
You feel understood. You feel welcomed. Those are all feelings of trust.
Okay.
So it's an emotion.
Right. Now, so for people out there to just, when you think about trust, you think about the emotion of it, how it makes you feel. Now, one of the things that you also indicated were that the two main ingredients of trust were honesty and truth. And you had a great chart in your book that distinguished the difference between honesty and truth. So can you maybe just give us an example of, first of all, what they are and an example of the slight difference between the two?
Honesty is, from your point of view, you can
mm-hmm.
honestly say you did the best you could on something.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is a fact. It is or it is not. Say, for example, Susie comes home and says to her husband, Bill, honestly, I went shopping and I overspent. That's honesty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill goes, okay, I'm glad you told me this. And but the truth is, she spent $65 on a pants, $75 on a sweatshirt, $30 on a scarf, and say $75 on earrings, and she spent $75 more than she wanted to spend.
Mm-hmm.
So she can honestly say, I spent more than I thought I was planning,
mm-hmm.
but the truth is, boom, 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 this is where she spent her money on. That is the truth, because you can measure that.
Right. Okay. Okay. And see, it's that distinction that I think, for people who read your book, I think that is, that's very helpful for people when they're doing self-examination, that it's to be able to distinguish honesty and truth, feeling and fact. Those are, because a lot of in your book, you spend a lot of time helping the reader question and become aware, become more self-aware.
Looking at your inner works, your inner self, is very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
Because you leave a lot of baggage behind.
Yep. Yep. You feel lighter, for sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, regarding conflict, you mentioned that, some conflict is good. I'm the kind of person that I am conflict avoidance. is one of my I'm very cooperative, not competitive, is my general disposition. But one of the things that I found helpful in your book is you talked about the different coping mechanisms that people use in dealing with conflict. Avoidance, dismissing, closed off, attacking, all of those different coping mechanisms, I think really, again, in that self-examination will tell us exactly how we deal with conflict and maybe shift our perspective to be more embracing of conflict in the positive aspect that it has.
And to build on that, because it's all true what you say, Robert, to build on that, if you recognize it in yourself, it could be that it's easier for you to recognize it in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa, if you recognize it in somebody else, it could be easier to look inside yourself.
Yeah.
And the moment you recognize this, then, Johnny's coping mechanism is avoidance. You go click, click, click. What can I do to get them engaged in discussing this topic without a full-blown conflict?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that is a valuable tool to manage conflict, to be able to come to a resolution, because, you know, avoidance is a popular one, as well as attacking, you know, that whole confrontation, you know, I mean, I think those two are opposite ends of the spectrum, but, you know, as far as coping mechanisms, but understanding if the person with whom you are engaged in a conflict, knowing how they cope, makes it easier to be able to work with that, to be able to understand and frame it.
Absolutely true.
Okay, great. Okay, accountability. We talked about accountability, and a couple of the points in that particular chapter for me, one of them was that, and this was just one of those, you know, little bits of information. You talked about being accountable is like an iceberg. 10% is toward others and 90% is toward yourself. And, boy, I thought, you know, a lot of times, I mean, that's the truth, but I think a lot of people tend to reverse that. They think, you know, accountability is 90% toward other people and 10% toward me.
That is all what your society teaches you.
Mm.
And you will see it varies all over the world a little bit.
Okay.
But North Americans, absolutely true.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, I'm not a world traveler, so I don't have that perspective. But at least not yet, I should say. Okay. Well, I just, you know, again, that was one of those that I found, you know, an interesting perspective. And, you know, also in the chapter under accountability, you talked about hanging on to blame, shame, and guilt, you know, and how, I mean, that is baggage that I know so many folks really gladly carry. I don't know if they gladly, but it seems that there's a little resistance to do away with that whole blame, shame, and guilt.
Again, it comes back of people know what they know.
Mm.
And people know what they see in their immediate surroundings.
Yeah.
Yes, we have the media, but the media is not truthful.
Mm-hmm.
And when we take that on as truth, the whole media, that brings another layer of insecurities on top of ourselves.
Yeah. Yep, very much so. Okay, well, you know, we talked about commitment, and again, when you talked about when we, you know, there's the commitment to self, others, and the causes. Now, one of the things you talk about is in the book, in that chapter, is that when we break commitments to self, we really just don't recognize the damage that we do to our I am status. And, you know, so if you can talk just a little bit about this, you know, what is the difference between making a commitment to self that is true to our nature, and not one that is, you know, a result of the society or family or, you know, any of those kinds of conditioning?
If you break the commitment to self, what you do is you go against integrity of your I am status. When you put your I am status in jeopardy, for example, if one of your tools is you're very truthful to the bone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And circumstances or somebody you love ask you to go against that, to lie for them or to cover for them, or you lie towards yourself, as in, oh no, it's not that bad, subconsciously you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You feel you're getting heavy, you're feeling yuck, you feel sticky. All those feelings that indicate that you go against your I am status.
Okay. Yeah, you know, those, I mean, the one thing that I got from reading your book was, you know, is really just getting in touch with the central core of who I am, what makes me feel right and proper and at ease and light, you know, and happy, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, that's so often we, you know, because of the day-to-day rut or routine that we are in, that a lot of times we neglect to examine that and to create that, you know, to take actions to create more of that.
The easiest way of doing that is showing gratitude.
Yeah.
And I challenge everybody who's listening, for the next, if you can do it 90 days, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Find three things each day you're grateful for. And that can, from the sun is shining, to I got my new car, to I enjoy this cup of coffee, I'm happy I'm alive. Find something to be grateful for three things for 90 days.
Yep. Yeah, you know, expression of gratitude is one where I've really put a lot of attention to over the last few years, you know, talking about it on the show, recognizing that, you know, if I create a mindset of regularly expressing gratitude, then what seems to happen in my life is there's more to be grateful for.
You open yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, really, your pot of gold is at the end of the rainbow. Is you get to walk away with the knowledge that there is so much more in life. And all what you have to do is to choosing to look. Because miracles, something to be grateful for, it's everywhere. We have to be willing to look.
Yeah.
Shift perspective and look. Where is our pot of gold? Where is our pot of gold? Because it's there.
Yeah, very much so. Well, we're getting down toward the end of the show. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is that, you know, in your book you use a lot of personal experiences and those of several other people in the book. Why was it that you chose to use yourself and those others as an example?
Oh, that's very easy to answer. Because that's only what it is. It's an example. And that when you meet somebody on the street, or I meet somebody on the street, or your neighbor, really start looking at this person. Because this person has their own life story. And when you really start talking to a person, you start to figure out how wonderful and interesting each and one of us is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the life stories are in there. And that, yes, a lot of us have sucky periods in time.
Uh-huh. Right.
Find me somebody who hasn't.
Yeah.
And I would love to talk to that person.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of denial going on there. That's for sure. Yeah.
So when you start recognize it, and that's why I put it in, it can be done. Life can be great.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have hardship here and there. So they are just examples.
Yeah.
From
okay.
Everyday people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I found them very useful. I mean, again, because, you know, you what you did is you presented the concept and gave the reader an example of how it manifests, what it looks like in a real-life situation. And then I think that process makes it easier for the reader to be able to do that self-examination.
That was the totally goal of it.
Mission accomplished.
Well, thank you.
Now, one of the things is that you used SurveyMonkey questionnaires a lot throughout the book. So tell me about, you know, why you chose it. And I just have to say that it was actually before I finished reading your book, but when I started and I saw that you use SurveyMonkey, I thought, what is this? I need to check this out. I have actually started to use that for what I'm doing right now. But what to tell us about, you know, how useful that was for you in putting this book together.
It's sort of the same as the life stories. What I did, I created, I think, 13 questions, 12 or 13 questions, and I sent them to all my people in my email address book, and they 43 came back, and they filled out questions on how they viewed certain things. And it was kind of just for giving, again, another perspective. But not only I was saying, all the other three people were saying, but numerous people. What did a group of people said on certain topics? That's why I put it in.
Yeah.
Just to get a widespread perspective as I could get it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I found it very interesting going through and reading the results and also those answers that you received that were, in addition, that kind of went outside, and to me, those were helpful too. Again, because I think it presents a wide spectrum of views, and when you do that, you capture a whole lot more readers to being able to identify what it is that you're trying to present.
And that's exactly why I put it in.
Yep. Again, good call. Good call, Ellen. Well, this has really been a real treat speaking with you. I really have enjoyed talking with you and discussing the 5-point system. Reading your book really has created a lot of self-introspection for me, and so for the reader out there who wants to recognize that life is great even when it sucks, it's a great read. So, and any final words that you may want to present to the listeners that maybe I didn't cover?
Well, I think we covered it all. I mean, to cover the book in an hour is just too short.
Mm-hmm.
To get more insight, I would say go to www.ellenisland.com, because that brings you straight to the book.
Okay. Well, I didn't have that. I'm going to go ahead and I will add that to the show page description, so people who will listen to this in the archives, they will also have that link there as well. So, well, thank you, Ellen. I really...
One more little thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm very passionate about this.
Okay, that's good.
And this is for all the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel in a funk that you don't know where to go, do something. Make movement. Because if you keep stagnant, you will keep spinning your wheels in the mud. I would say do something. Go out. You get some great ideas in life is great even when it sucks. But there are other ways if that's what you choose to do, but do something. And you're so worth it, each and one of you. Doesn't matter, men, women, whatever your past is, wherever you came from, whatever you're going to, you're worth it. Keep that always in mind.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time, Ellen. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to keeping in touch And again, I want to appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this.
No problem, and I'm so happy that you enjoyed the book.
I did. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us today. Again, my very special guest has been Ellen Nyland, and we've been talking about her book, Life is Great, Even When It Sucks. And again, you can find out more by visiting ellennyland.com, and there will be, in a moment, a direct link to her webpage there in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.